You must be hungover, Jazza.
I'm not hungover. I don't get hangovers.
Oh, you don't, do you?
Yeah, no, I'm, like, sprightly. But I... so, the three... Triple J is here.
Yeah, if we hire another person, they need to have Joe.
Name. You say hire another person as if, I mean, as if anybody's getting any money out of it.
Yeah, I don't want to imply
we're spending money
paid.
On this, Jimmy. but John is here.
Yeah, I love idea. Getting money for this.
I bought you a pint every now and again, so I mean, I probably would have done anyway. But.
Yeah, but those were round, Jimmy.
Where are my expenses? That's what I want to know.
Hello, this is The Right Dishonourable. My name's Jazza.
I'm John.
I'm Jimmy.
And we are Triple J. What? No, we're not. We're
You're
three guys.
Not hip enough.
We're fry. We're hip. We're using the word hip.
Yeah.
We're three white cis guys who talk about far too many things that we don't know about. But it's mainly politics, social issues,
current affairs.
Did you just say white cis?
No, white
comma
cis.
Right, okay.
I don't know why you felt the need. I mean, we're all privately educated as well. You really should have thrown that in.
Oh, yeah, that as well. So our opinions are, like, the most important in the world, and that's why we do this podcast. What are we going to... This is a car crash already. What are we going to do this week, Jimmy? Oh, my God. Jesus.
I assume we'll start off with this thing about tax credits and what happened in the House of Lords this week and how the Lords managed to defeat the Commons on probably the most significant piece of legislation since Tony Blair reformed the House of Lords, I guess. And it's been very embarrassing for George Osborne, who's been trying to make life just that little bit harder for the poorest people in our country. And yeah, we're going to discuss the implications of that, what the future is for the House of Lords and the Constitution of the United Kingdom, you know, important things.
Which we don't have, right? We don't have a constitution.
We do, but it's written out in, like, various bits and a lot of it's conventional. But we can get on
we'll get
on
to
that
later. Also, we're going to talk about Edward Snowden, because Edward Snowden has now been given asylum in the EU.
No, he hasn't been
kind
given,
of.
No, they had a vote, and they voted to grant him asylum in the European Parliament, which doesn't really have very much power.
But I'm just saying the headline, Jimmy. Well, let me just say the headline.
Wherever the headline is, that's wrong. That's inaccurate.
So we're going to talk about the implications of that, whether Snowden is going to be able to leave Russia. That'd be quite nice for him. I'm sure he's had enough borscht now. Borscht and vodka.
I don't know, it seems pretty cushy in Moscow for him.
Moscow is quite nice. I went there and it was lovely.
Lovely.
Great, lovely. And then thirdly, I've insisted that we talk about China again.
Yeah.
And so, yay!
We do talk about America a lot, so probably it's fair to give China more of a look in.
The second, we've got two of the major world powers, the EU, kind of, and China this week.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Excellent, good for
us. Are we going to say why we're talking about China?
We are. So,
No.
It's basically going to be like flicking through my holiday flicks. No, we're talking about China because they have decided to change the one-child policy to a two-child policy, and that has implications in it.
Yeah.
Shall we begin?
We shall.
Good. Lords, John.
All of them?
Yeah.
All 800 of them go now.
I've got no...
Wait, there's not 800 now, are there?
Yeah.
Has it gone up to 800?
It is, because Cameron's added more lords after the recent election. Did you not hear about this?
No, we talked about it, didn't we?
I think we did.
Yeah. But I didn't realise it was up to 800 now.
I'm pretty sure it's 800. That's 816 or something like that.
That's ridiculous.
A lot of them
ridiculous.
Don't turn up.
I know quite significantly that Lloyd Webber flew back to to vote down this whole tax credit thing, which went through anyway.
Yeah.
So apparently he's only voted like under 50 times, despite the fact he's had something like over 1,000 opportunities to use his vote. So, and he claimed that he'd only voted because he was in town watching the re-premiere of Cats, and he's basically trying to pretend that he's not a massive cunt.
We should probably explain what this vote was about.
Yeah, so the tax credits thing, I've not really liked the idea of us talking about it because I don't really understand it. But what's happening...
That usually doesn't stop us.
No, to be fair. What do we need... What should we know about tax credits? What's George Osborne tried to do, and then what have the Lords done? Set the scene for us. Paint us a picture, Jimmy.
So the order of tax credits, and I'm going to get the names wrong, but there's like a working tax credit, which is like a top-up of... It subsidises low wages, basically, so people have a little bit more to live off. It's kind of like a worker's benefit. And there's also child tax credits, which obviously... It's just a benefit for people who have children. And what George Osborne has done when he raised...
And this was a legacy of Gordon Brown, right?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. What George Osborne, when he said we're going to raise the minimum wage, which he branded as a living wage, even though it isn't the same as what a living wage actually is.
Yeah, but hashtag branding.
Branding, yes. He said, I'm going to raise the living wage and I'm going to bring down the welfare bill. And it's this whole slogan about high wages, low welfare or whatever. But the Institute for Fiscal Studies, I think, did the maths on what the net effect of these changes would be. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that a lot of families, when these changes come through in April, are effectively going to be a grand worse off per year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the minimum wage is coming in staggered steps, and that will eventually go up. But even when all of those changes are through by 2020, when the...
Everyone's still going to be worse off.
Everyone's still going to be worse
like
off.
Or, like, on a whole... People are going to be
There's actually a chart you can see if you go on, I think it's the Institute for Fiscal Studies website, where like the 90th percentile of people in terms of wealth, mm-hmm. That is in the top, not the top 10%, but the second top 10% in terms of wealth are going to be better off because of these changes, but... Everyone else is going to be worse off to various degrees.
No, I remember this when it came out, actually. They had a little thing that broke down what kind of backgrounds you might come from, and essentially it benefited you if you were middle class and working in London.
Yeah.
So, oh, I'm fine! In which case, why has this been sent back?
Well, the only thing that's been sent back is the tax credits thing. Yeah. So,
am I still going to be better off as a middle class person working in London?
I don't think it will affect you one way or the other,
that's
because you're not on minimum wage.
But
yeah, basically it was going to make everyone worse, and there's been... Even the Sun dislike this so much that they're actually coming out campaigning for it, although cynical people, unlike myself, have suggested this maybe because a significant portion of their readership is going to be affected by this.
Shock, shock, horror, horror.
Shock. But what happened is George Osborne tried to put this through a statutory instrument, which is not the same as a full bill, so it doesn't go through the same stages of scrutiny in Parliament. But the Lords actually have power to veto statutory instruments. They can just send them down, whereas the Lords, for most things, don't have that power.
Mm-hmm. So we could talk about the fact that George Osborne has basically been trying to sneak this through. He's kind of failed in that, but we were going to talk about the Lords, like, batting it for six and sending it back to him.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm helping to paint the picture, Jimmy. I'm just letting the listeners know.
So that's just the background to what's happened.
Yeah.
And because the Lords did it, and the Lords are unelected...
10 minutes in.
yeah, five with the intro, man. Come on. Because the Lords are unelected, the way the Lords is composed is there's hereditary peers, which are like whenever one... There's a pool of hereditary peers. A select number of them, I think about 100 or so, sit in the House of Lords. Whenever one dies, the remaining hereditary peers in the larger pool vote another one in. There's also the bishops from the Church of England, and there's also appointed peers, which are picked by whoever is Prime Minister at the given time. Mm. But yeah, George Osborne did actually joke that George Osborne's on the record, apparently, even before this event, saying that he wants an elected upper chamber.
Oh, that's quite exciting. It's not very Tory of him, though, is it?
No, he even said, like, when he mentioned it, like, this isn't the view that has prevailed on either when I've been in opposition or in government. But mm-hmm. I think even when you lay aside the whole tax credits thing, which I think were bad measures, this is a good thing because it has kind of forced the issue on the House of Lords reform, mm-hmm. which it does need to be fixed. Something needs to be done about it.
This is the weird thing, though. It's forced the issue when actually most people are glad that they've knocked this back.
Yeah.
It's an example of something going right, and yet
it's kind of something that it shouldn't be.
Yeah, it sort of plays into their hands in the sense that, you know, they can now reform the Lords and potentially get rid of a lot of Liberal and Labour Lords who knocked this back.
So there were two kind of campaigns, two main campaigns to kind of scupper this for Osborne, right? There was one led by the Labour peers who were trying to send it back to the chamber for it to get a proper reading and then for it to be voted on again. Am I right in saying that that's what happens?
There are a couple of different motions. Mm-hmm. I think there were four, but the two ones that were voted through were delaying motions. There was a fatal motion which would effectively have killed.
And that was headed up by the Lib Dems, right?
I don't know if you say that's true.
I think that is true. I heard it somewhere. Good.
But yeah, the fatal motion didn't go through. The delaying motion did.
What does that mean then?
I believe it means it goes back to the House of Commons. They have to make some changes and send it back. But ultimately,
do they have to vote again?
I think so, yes.
So is that going to be really tricky for Osborne? Because that basically now means that because a load of his own Tory MPs have kind of been like rebelling on it in terms of how they're talking about it and saying that actually my constituents are going to be worse off with this. Is he going to have trouble putting this through again?
Yeah, I mean, the main problem, I think, is not really necessarily from his own party. It's that he's been embarrassed in the press and in the public eye. So if he just tries to push it through again.
And he was riding high after conference. People are like, oh, yeah, he's like going to be the next anointed prime minister. Yeah.
Johnson is wanking right now.
I am quite happy to see him, like, dragged down a peg or two. But should we be worried? Like, that? Yeah, we don't like Gideon very much, and we're quite happy to see him squirt a bit.
I don't hate Gideon.
I hate Gideon. Oh. So
Gideon is
John, what are your feelings
George
on Gideon?
Osborne's actual name.
George Osborne is called Gideon.
Oh,
George is his middle name.
When he was 15 or something, he changed his name.
No, really? Yeah. That's embarrassing.
But Boris Johnson's real name's Alexander.
Yeah, which is strange.
I mean, he's just changed it to a stranger name, if anything.
Yeah. but should we be worried and should we care about the fact that what is essentially meant to be a fact-checking law?
Strengthens my prediction that Johnson is going to become the next Prime Minister. Is my total feelings on it.
Yeah, we're going to vote to leave Europe and then Boris Johnson will be Prime Minister. I think that's what's going to happen.
I don't think it matters too much for Osborne's premiership hopes or whatever.
Yeah. I think it does because he dealt with it really badly. He was interviewed by the BBC's political editor and he could only say three things over and over again. It was humiliating. He said, this was voted down by the Labour and Liberal Lords, and we're very clear that we need to try and reform the House of Lords, and it's not a defeat for us. And he kept saying those three things over and over and over again.
I think that was just a messaging thing.
He properly looked like he had one of those, like, people talk about brain farts. It was like, it was brain diarrhea. He was just fucked for this 5 minute.
But they seemed very happy. So when you think of Tories, you think of them being quite happy that the Lords is how it is. But we've seen Cameron try and manipulate it by putting more people in. Mm. Like we talked about this a few weeks ago, where Blair actually had to work with a Tory majority in the Lords for the first 5 years of his his premiership, I think, or something along those lines.
No, you say that's true.
I think so.
Yeah.
Only as true as sources permit. But now he's saying, oh, yeah, we need to reform what has worked for us in the past. And there's, like, that disingenuous element. But are we happy that the Lords is doing this, that the Lords actually has some bite? Do we care that they aren't elected? Do we just think that having that kind of an opposition is a good thing?
I think if it goes straight for an elected option, you have potential for the same problem that you have in the American Congress, where
everyone's a nutter. Oh, are we talking about a different problem?
No, it's a different problem from that in that the way Congress was supposed to be set up, you have House of Representatives, which represents counties, is that right? Or like smaller regions, and then the Senate represents states.
Yeah.
But in effect, they're both controlled by the Republican and Democrat Party, and mm-hmm. they're in constant competition with one another to see who actually has legislative supremacy. And the way a good upper house works is it's a revising chamber, mm-hmm. and it doesn't challenge the legitimacy of the lower chamber. It just sort of is there to have a slightly longer term view on things, mm-hmm. basically.
So I will pause the question again, Jimmy, because you refuse to answer. Is this something that we should either worry about or champion, the fact that it's got this, that the Lords is coming up against the Tory government and telling it to fact check? Because obviously the Tories are not, like Osborne's Tories are not very happy about this.
I think it's legitimate role for like an upper house to have, saying you didn't do the maths on this, or if you did, you were dishonest about what the maths was. Mm-hmm. This wasn't in your manifesto. It's not a financial instrument, even though you're claiming it is a financial bill. Like the Lords, by convention, isn't supposed to vote down financial bills, but this is a welfare bill, in effect. And it's also not a proper bill, it's a statutory instrument, which has... There's like huge amounts of complexity and lack of clarity about what the role of the Lords is, partly because it's never been fully reformed.
Yeah.
But I think there's actually... This won't happen, but there is an opportunity right now because of the intersection between what's happened in the Lords this week and the problems with British federalism, or the lack thereof, and the sense that... what's happening in Scotland with the Scottish devolutionary powers and what have you, and also the fact that the UK is still too London-centric. I think George Osborne, to be fair to him, he's not a bog-standard Tory. He's actually a reforming Tory.
Yeah. Northern powerhouse and all
Northern
that shit.
Northern powerhouse.
Like,
he's obviously very much in favour of all that, and if he had the political support to do it, I think that's something that he would be open to actually fixing it so it's a proper revising house, and also... bundling in some elements of federalism to that. But
I'd like to see it personally as either a judiciary body or an independent body. And that I forget who they are, but the expenses now, for example, are checked over by an independent body, aren't they?
The independent parliamentary standards.
I would like the House of Lords to look more like an independent parliamentary standards committee, because I would like them to have mainly the powers to revise, like you said, the math on bills and the implications of them, and to be able to send them back if they think,
is this going to happen?
No.
No, right.
I mean, to that point, though, there are lots and lots of various committees and scrutinising bodies, and when a bill goes through the House, it doesn't just go through the Commons and the Lords.
There's lots of intermediary
stages.
That's why I said, principally, I'd like to see it be more of a judiciary body, because I know we have our own Supreme Court and that works, etc., but I think if anybody is going to have the right to vote on different bills that go through, I would most happily let that fall into the hands of the judiciary.
Judiciary to vote?
Yeah, no, as in if the House of Lords, the people who were allowed to vote in the House of Lords, were only judges, barristers, people like that, I would be happy with that.
I think that's something that we've said in the past as well, that we quite like it to be a chamber of experts.
Experts is slightly different from... judges, though, I think. I mean, the role of the Supreme Court, we're now, like, I assume we're, like, 15 minutes into this segment, so we currently...
I'm wrapping this up, like, now.
Yeah, the role of the Supreme Court is, like, an entire another topic.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah.
Great, so wrapping this up, like, now. And the saga of the Right Dishonourable talking about the Lords continues. What will happen next? Oh, it's exciting. Isn't it? We're recording now.
Oh, wait.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I had a burp. I had to deal with it. So, Jazza, this week, China has changed what must be some years of having a one-child policy and now has a two-child policy.
Correct.
Explain.
So, in 1979, lots of people attribute the one-child policy to Mao. He liked the idea of it, but it was actually... put into place after he died, and under the rule of Deng Xiaoping, who was seen as a big reformer. But basically, it was a way of being able to control population exploding, just because China did not have the resources to be able to feed, to provide services to the amount of people that were being born. It was quite ridiculous. And China traditionally has quite large families, and traditionally had quite large extended families. So you went from, especially rural areas, people having like 11 brothers and sisters, to all of a sudden there just being one child. And so that's created a lot of interesting cultural stuff in the last, how many years? Like 79, 89, 99, 2009, like 35 years. There you go. That was live maths.
So are we to read this as kind of part of China's rising economy, and China now has the infrastructure to allow...
No, not
to read it that way.
So the reason that they've been testing, laxing these laws for a while. So, for example, ethnic minorities, I think about 3% of China is non-Han Chinese, so of like Tibetan descent or Mongolian or whatever. And they have not had restrictions on the amount of children that you can have, because otherwise it would be like, oh, awkward, we're trying to reduce the amount of men.
Also, if you come from a single parent family.
So that was a recent thing.
That was 2 years ago or something.
If you and your partner are both only children, then you can have more than one child. But basically what that has created is the fastest growing aging population in the world. And they are basically going to need more babies so that they can look after the oldies, because they just have a massive aging population that's going to need to be looked after somehow. And so that's the reason that they have now changed it from a one-child to a two-child policy.
So you said you don't think they have the infrastructure and the ability really to cope with more children. Is this going to cause problems then?
I think so. I think that they do. And I don't think that that's an issue, because China is incredibly... the bits of China that are most populated have quite good infrastructure and have quite good services now. But what I think the reason that they haven't just completely scrapped a birth control policy is because you don't want to destroy the whole dam. You want to take it down eventually. And if you were to take away the one-child, like any kind of restriction on the amount of children you can have now, you would end up just having people having huge amounts of children again, and you'd have this same problem.
You say that, and admittedly, I'm no expert, but there are some problems with infrastructure in terms of things like water supply to certain parts of China is becoming very, very problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very much taken into consideration in terms of things like
healthcare. And stuff like caring for the elderly and things like that. So China traditionally has actually quite a good attitude to looking after its old people, in that like grandmas and grandpas will live in-house with their children and grandchildren, and the grandparents will look at the help to raise the grandchild.
Presumably that's partly to do with restrictions on where people can work and live anyway.
No, I think it's just like a tradition. So China traditionally, like going way back into like Qing Dynasty, lived in massive complexes with their families. Even you just lived in really big, basically communes with your family.
Yeah.
And so that has kind of been carried through into modern Chinese living. And it has meant that... basically, the one-child policy has meant you've got things called little emperors. So it means that you have the 4-2-6 phenomenon, where you one child has two parents and four grand.
You mean the 4-2-1
parents? 4-2-1. Yeah. What did I say?
4-2-6.
Yeah, I can't do maths. yay, numbers. So basically, that means that you have one child having six adults, having that child as like the centre of their world, and it's created some just idiots.
So the way the West has dealt with like its demographic problem, because we have a similar thing in terms of Asian population, is generally to have been reduce controls on migration.
Yeah,
basically.
We also have a different problem in the West, though, because in the West in general, people have stopped having children. I know that's a really blanket, incorrect thing to say, but in general,
mm-hmm. In general, it has reduced, hasn't it?
And America, people are now much less inclined to care about having kids.
So even with the one-child policy, China is still having more children per capita than most of Europe.
Yeah.
Right, but do we think that this is... why do you think that is? Why do you think that...
Because they saw the film Blade Runner, and they really want the future to look like that. Just Chinese people everywhere.
Is that what Blade Runner's like? I've never seen it.
Explain what happens in Blade Runner.
So it's actually based on real...
We got from the one child to the Communist Party.
That's wrong with it.
It's based on real scientific projections at the time. Was that China's the exponential growth of China's population was going to mean that we can sort of... I think it was set in 2025 or something.
Ooh.
And by 2025, the world was just going to essentially be Chinese, because Chinese people would be on every continent, and the overall culture of the world would have been Chinesified, if that makes sense.
Chinesified. kind of like the Firefly universe, where they had the US and China go and colonise some moons.
Yeah.
And then everybody was, like, bilingual, and it was really cool. Like, my brain just had a massive orgasm.
Yeah, it wasn't like...
And they'd be, like, speaking in English and then chucking a Chinese swear word, and I was like, that's how I speak!
It wasn't portrayed as a bad thing at all. It was just, like, you know, you got the things fact. Like burgers with noodles in and stuff like that, and...
I'm sure that already happens in the States. Sure,
you know what's a really good thing that China has created? Rice burgers.
Mm. Yeah.
Amazing. So instead of bread, it's rice. They're so good. But basically, so what moving swiftly on, what were we talking about before?
Like the difference between in the West, we tend to...
Oh, yeah, migration, right?
We tend to increase migration into the country to deal with demographic problems. In China, obviously the culture's... different.
So the way that they've done it is, so they see migration very differently in that they have lots of internal migration and they don't really see the need, because they have incredibly poor low-level workers and incredibly rich white-collar workers, and they kind of see them having all of the resources that they need. The one thing that China has is a shit ton of people. And so they, I feel like it would be very strange if they then started looking to fill demographic gaps with foreigners, and also China's a bit xenophobic as well.
Yeah, they don't let their own people leave, do they? You have to pay an extraordinary amount of money to cross the border.
Yeah, it's quite difficult.
You can also, like, want some...
Kind of like America, where, like, only 30% of them have a passport.
Yeah, well, I think it's... Because, obviously...
But enforced.
It's quite hard to...
Yeah, I was going to... That is voluntary.
Yeah. Chinese people can't leave. Well, like, this is unfair. Chinese people can leave.
They can't, really,
it's just
because
difficult.
Of how much
it costs. So, yeah, it's only the very rich who are able to leave.
I mean, it is something ridiculous. It's,
and they
there's it's like a dollar amount of thousands to get out of the country.
And they also have like a hukou system. So if you want a passport, so hukou means basically you're tied to the place where you were born.
Yeah.
And this is actually one of the things that drove the one-child policy, was if you were from a particular part of the country, then the one-child policy didn't apply to you. So that would be like rural areas where there's a tradition of subsistence farming. Those families and people in that hukou would then not be, have to adhere to it, which is why China actually still has a reasonably high birth rate compared to other Western nations. I think it's 1.7.
So do you expect the birth rate to go up massively once these...
Well, it'll go up to about 2.
Surely it's between 1 and 2 at the moment, then?
It's between 1 and 2. So the thing is, although the one-child policy, and there's a lot of horror stories about it being enforced and about people having to have forced abortions, that does happen, but it doesn't happen very often. Because it's been left down to local authorities to enforce this policy, it means that there's a huge spectrum of how local authorities have chosen to enforce
it. But it's mostly done through fines. It is true that there is a problem with... There's way more young men than young women.
Yes.
I mean, it's in the thousands, the discrepancy.
So are you referencing infanticide?
Yeah, I guess.
That also rarely happens.
No, you're saying it doesn't happen, but there must be something going on.
So the reason that male population is larger than female, not infanticide, but because a different kind of infanticide, abortions of female fetuses, which is why now, for a while in China, it's been illegal to know the gender, the sex of your unborn fetus, because they had so many people were aborting female fetuses because they would rather have a guy, because Chinese culture complicated. But also, what you end up seeing, and probably one of the bigger things that has driven this explosion of the male demographic, is the fact that families would be more likely to put money into the healthcare of a male infant than a female infant.
Right.
So you see female infant death rates much higher than male infants are, because the family just doesn't spend as much money on the healthcare of girls.
So I mean, it's more complicated than straightforward infanticide, but it still kind of amounts.
Yeah. But it's not something that is as horrific as the we're forcing women to have an abortion. That has happened, but it doesn't happen very often.
I was saying earlier, wasn't I, from a logistical point of view, that's got
quite,
to be a nightmare.
Quite difficult, yeah. But most people, so I know a lot of, not a lot of, but I know a number of Chinese people who are not from single, who are not only children, and that's just because their parents had them or had their brother or sister and just paid the fine. And that is how the majority of people get around it, and they don't particularly care.
So is the fine a massive amount, then?
It depends on income. But and I mean, it depends
is
on
it, is, it, is it a massive amount relative to your income, then? Is it a significant cost?
It's enough that it hurts. I remember there's the story of a really famous director having his third child, and so the fine goes up the more children you have.
Sure, yeah.
So your second child, it's not as much, and the third child is a lot more. He was fined. This really famous Chinese director was fined 75 million renminbi, which is about £700,000 for wow. having his third child, because he's really rich and it, you want to make like a significant dent. One of my friends from Nanjing, which is like a second tier city, and the population of London, a place that nobody's ever heard of. Welcome to China. He is the second boy. So he has an older brother and he is the younger brother. And his parents couldn't really afford to pay the fine. And so they got all of their friends to kind of chip in so that they could have this kid. Yeah, so there have been loads of ways around it. But this is going to be a very interesting... It's been an interesting way of them kind of planning for the future of their what is going to be a huge increase in the elderly, which is just going to be... Which is something that the rest of the world is kind of dealing with at the moment as well.
Much fun for China ahead, then.
Yeah, loads of sex. Yeah. I mean, only as much sex that gives you two children. Good. Any other questions?
No.
You haven't said very much offensive in this one.
I know, I haven't.
He's feeling too ill to offend people.
There is that. I've actually just been quite interested. That was quite informative.
I'm glad.
He's bored most of the time.
Oh, no. if you guys have any opinions on the one-child policy and the increasing of it to a two-child policy, then do let us know on Twitter, @RightDishonor. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
RightDishonorable.com is where you can find us to comment on things.
And iTunes as well.
And iTunes. Like, just interact with us. We like it when that happens. Love you lots.
So, this week, Edward Snowden,
who... start every topic with so. Can I just say...
It kind of works though, because when the is this recording?
Yeah,
we can start this again. It's fine.
No. This is the start.
Oh, okay. Snow.
It's snow.
Snow.
Wait,
snow. This week, Edward Snowden from the movie Citizen Four.
he's got an Oscar.
He's really, really good. He did get an Oscar.
Nobody talks about.
Nobody. I know. It's, yeah.
Almost as if people are trying to suppress the story.
He's like that guy nobody can remember who was in The Artist.
The Frenchie.
Yeah, exactly. As well. Yeah. So the European Parliament passed a motion to grant him asylum in the EU. This obviously, Edward Snowden is living somewhere in
Ruski.
In Ruski.
Yeah.
Is it near Moscow? Do people actually know?
It's near Moscow.
He's near Moscow.
Near Moscow.
Sure.
Apparently,
I did think about hunting him down when I was there, but didn't.
I imagine he's a difficult chap to find.
I would imagine he is quite difficult to find. Well, there's some people, like, there's been footage released of him in his kitchen with his girlfriend, so that fucking, a camera crew has been there. It was in the movie,
yeah.
Okay,
was,
yeah.
Laura Poitras, or how do you say
Poitras.
Her name? Poitras.
Poitras, yeah.
Poitras? Laura.
that was Laura.
Anyway, so he's been given asylum nominally by the European Parliament.
That's not true. He hasn't been given.
Yeah,
asylum.
Well, I was about to fucking throw this over to you to explain. So, Jimmy, if you'd
this
like,
this is John's first. He's leading on his first topic, and you're being a dickhead, Jimmy. Be nice.
So, Jimmy, if you'd like to explain, why is it horse shit that he's been given asylum?
Say it was horseshit. He hasn't been given asylum because the European Parliament is not a very significant body. It doesn't have a lot of power in terms of like the EU or in global politics.
Just as
generally.
A point of order, that does sound like you're saying it's horseshit that he's been given us.
I mean, it is. Okay,
may the record show.
What you said was horseshit, but I was trying to be nice.
Okay.
And this is what happens, you know, just throwing back in my face.
So what actually has happened then? So they've voted by a very narrow margin to... But it, like it is, to grant him asylum is what all of the headlines say. What's actually happened then?
Well, they voted to grant him asylum, but they don't have the power to grant him asylum. The European Parliament, in a lot of ways, is just a talking shop where people discuss things and they vote on motions, but the motions don't have legal effect.
That all sounds very silly, quite frankly.
Yeah, but you know,
it is the EU,
that's
though.
That's the way the EU works. So it doesn't mean that he's going to be allowed into any EU country.
Well, we did try... We have seen a breakdown of the vote, and it does seem to be the majority of those who have voted to give him asylum versus not seems to be quite evenly split amongst right and left. So you have the centre-rights, who basically all voted to not grant him asylum, in quotation marks. The libertarians, like the far right, they kind of wanted to, and then the left wanted to grant him asylum. And so it's interesting that you have that right-left kind of spectrum.
It's kind
we tried to see a breakdown by country, but couldn't find it. But we were saying earlier that we think it could be possible that Snowden could look at who voted for what and see which countries he might be most...
He's definitely done that already. I mean, he's an intelligent guy. I would have thought he wants to know...
One assumes.
Yeah, where hypothetically he could move. I don't think he will, though. I mean, you know more about this, Jimmy, but I don't think he'll move out of Russia.
He's only been granted Russian asylum for a year.
Yeah.
No, they extended that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes, he's got a couple of years.
It's only extended on a year-by-year basis, isn't it?
Yeah, but
he has to reapply.
I believe he's actually applied for Russian citizenship as well. I might just be putting that out.
See, that's weird, because for somebody who's so against state control, he's living in, like, the belly of the beast.
Yeah,
now.
But he hasn't got very many options. That's true.
You know, I mean, he's also said actually that he'd enter a plea bargain with the United States to go back and even serve some time in jail. But the United States prosecutors, whichever body deals with that, is not willing to make that deal with him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's actually even offered to go back and go to jail for what he's done. But, you know,
so
they won't play ball.
There was something really interesting that you were saying earlier, Jimmy, that it would actually be, if he were to end up in the European Union, it would be very difficult for them to extradite him to the US because we aren't allowed...
This was actually in relation to Julian Assange, which is a slightly different thing, but...
Oh, okay.
Edward Snowden's been charged with treason.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the actual charge, but I believe it does carry the death penalty in some states. And because of the European Convention on Human Rights, which is the thing that the Tories are always complaining about.
Love it.
In Britain.
I've done a video on it, if you would like to know more about the European Court of Human Rights.
Because of that, we can't send people to a country where they might face the death penalty, because it's viewed as cruel and unusual punishment. I think that's right.
Yeah. So would it actually, if he did end up in the EU, would it actually... theoretically be quite difficult for the US to get his hands on him if the government that he goes to decides not to?
I think it depends on which country it is, because Britain has a fast track treaty when it comes to sending people abroad to the Americans.
To call it something like a fast track.
It also depends
on what it is.
Sounds like checking out at Sainsbury's.
I know this sounds a bit like movie, but surely it also depends on whether they extradite him legally. Because there must be illegal ways to extradite him it's the US.
What, are you talking kidnapping?
Essentially, but nobody can do anything about that if they want to. It's the US.
You know that the world isn't homeland.
Yeah, no, right? I know. But theoretically, there's nothing to stop them from dragging him to a US airbase somewhere in Europe. No, I mean, like, they could theoretically do that.
Yeah, theoretically, but then why haven't they done that to him?
Well, I mean, the reason I say that is because the people who most want him to pay for what he's done are military joint chiefs, and they hold a lot of sway over sort of black ops and stuff like that, so...
I want to pivot this to the UK. What do you guys think about like public perception of him? Because I had a really interesting talk about this with some friends the other day, and they first of all think he's Julian Assange, which is just awkward.
Oh yeah, John did that earlier
yeah.
as well.
Yeah,
so. they're not the same people.
They are not the same people and did not do the same things. And also seem to be confused as to what his goals are. So I understand his goals as trying to inform people that they are being watched. And then he's handed over a lot of files and information to media companies that have then made not great decisions about how that information is
Are we talking about Snowden here or Assange?
No, we're talking about Snowden here.
Which organisation, media organisation, are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of the New York Times. That kind of, that they release... Am I thinking about the wrong thing? Because maybe I have the same problem. But they released information that basically... something regarding Iraq?
As I understand it, the Snowden files are mostly... Well, they were with Glenn Greenwald and his team originally.
From The Guardian.
I think this is me like trying to claw back ancient memories at this point, but I believe that Russia and China actually got hold of some of the files as well.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe they've yielded intelligence from them if you're able to obtain them. That's certainly true of some of the WikiLeaks files because they're just available online. Anyone yeah. can go and download them.
I think that Jazz is right though, because there is, I think, some ambiguity about what he was trying to do, and I understand it in. He doesn't want a McCarthy-era America all over again. So under McCarthyism, the US tried to question you about your political affiliations and personal beliefs, and they had no right to, because under constitutional law over there, you're allowed to keep certain things about yourself private as a private citizen. And I think his point is that the NSA doesn't, by proxy, allow you privacy. They know what your political affiliations are, who you're talking to, what you're talking to them about. And he doesn't think that's correct. He thinks that... Well, he said very explicitly that it's a violation of personal liberties in the Constitution.
I don't think he says that it isn't correct, but I think that he says that people should know that it's happening. And I think that that is the main issue that he's had, and that we should have this conversation about surveillance. And that, I think... that's been the party line that he has kind of been treading. So rather than saying, this is wrong, he's been saying, we should know that this is happening.
No, he's defended leaking the files by saying, we should know this is happening. Mm-hmm. He definitely does believe it's wrong.
Yeah, yeah, no, that, no, no.
That's definitely his view on things. Yeah. And if he didn't think it was wrong, I think it would be far less likely that he would have leaked the files, considering the amount of personal sacrifice he's had to go through.
He doesn't want to be the person making that argument. He wants it to be the journalists and the public that are coming to those conclusions.
Yeah, that's true.
And I find, this is from watching interviews with him, like the John Oliver interview, which was amazing. And if anybody hasn't watched the John Oliver interview, it's hilarious and great, and frames the whole thing around dick pics, and it's just the perfect way to make people worried about security. But I think that he has tried to be like just the person that did the thing rather than the person that's arguing the thing.
Well, yeah, he does get very ambiguous, doesn't he? When it gets to whether this should happen to people that the FBI or CIA are sort of worried about. He does get very ambiguous about whether they should have the right to... He sort of suggests that essentially if there's a warrant to look into somebody, then we should have the power to look into people. I think he has been quite ambiguous over whether he thinks that's right or wrong. And I think he errs on the side of thinking that for reasons of national security, if there's a legal warrant to look into somebody, the NSA should have that power. He just doesn't agree with the blanket spying.
Is
the impression I've got.
Mm. Gentlemen, if we were Snowden, where would you go? Hypothetical. Just thought it'd be quite fun.
You mean where would we travel?
Yeah, Would you stay in Russia, become Russian?
There's. I mean, it's not worth risking it, I don't think, anyway.
If the option of EU asylum was there, I'd probably take that. Because, I mean, I don't believe that... say a country like Sweden or any of the Scandinavian countries, I don't believe they'd extradite him.
I don't think he'll do that. I think because he's... obviously, if you've watched things like Citizen 4 and even the recent Panorama interview, he is genuinely worried about his safety in terms of what the US... He knows, because he was a high-ranking NSA person, that they can. There are people in the CIA, NSA, Pentagon, etc., who would quite happily see him dead.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true, but
because they
I
don't
think it's
want
more likely
leaks
that he'd be killed in Russia than he would be killed in a European country. I think it's pretty much unthinkable for the CIA to murder, you know, someone like Snowden on European soil. I don't see that happening. The CIA, at the best of times, is pretty fucking wayward and plays by its own rules, but even they, I think, would go, eh, maybe not.
I think if they were worried about another big leak, if he had something
He has no more files.
I know.
Even he doesn't have control of the files. He's deleted his own copies of them.
Yeah.
So I don't see that as a thing. Where would you go then, Jazza, to ask your own question?
I said Finland. I quite like Finland.
Okay.
It's cold winters, though.
Sweden. Quite similar climatically to Russia.
Quite seriously, though, it would be a Nordic country. Clearly, because they love this shit.
That's true.
I think after all the shit he's been through, he should just go to Malia, spend a couple of years there.
Go down to Marbella.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely.
Shagaloof.
Fuck. On that lovely note, are we happy to wrap this up now?
Good.
What do you guys think of Snowden? We'd love to hear from you if you have other opinions and you think he should be hanging or something. I don't know.
Cunt or champion. Use that as a hashtag.
Hashtag cunt or champion.
Any of our listeners are on the Let's Hang Snowden brigade?
I know at least one. And you know who you are. And if you're the person who's been creeped out by me knowing what you're thinking, then tweet us and let us know. Chastise us. You can find us at Right Dishonor on Twitter. Me at Jazza John. I've been Jazza John. Jimmy, what are you on Twitter?
I'm at JDE Nichols.
Excellent. John, what are you on Twitter?
I'm at Donkey OK.
OK is spelled with an AY.
With an AY. Don't fucking ask.
We'll see you next week, or listen to you, or you'll hear us next week, or something will happen next week. Bye.